It's actually perfect to have such a strong rain when we're exploring the balance of creativity and compassion, because when they're out of balance and when there's too much creativity or there's too much compassion, it's not necessarily a good situation, or vice versa. Too much creativity without the balance of compassion can lead into all kinds of self-absorbed states that really cut us off from the interconnection that is really the reality of life. And too much compassion without the creative, we can just completely give ourselves away. And neither of those states is beneficial. So in the same way, water, you know, just the right amount of water keeps us alive. Not enough water, we have drought, everything begins to die. Or too much water, we drown. Right? So it can, too much water is suffocating. Not enough water is parching. But just the right water is the most sublime thing there is. We know this in life. Everything is about balance. So again, just let yourself, you know, now that it's kind of quieting down, the windows are closed, and everybody's dealt with their cars and bicycles, and we can just sort of settle into being here. And again, just feel where you are in this contemplation we've been engaging in about the delicate balance of our creative impulse and of our compassionate impulse. And remember, by creative, we're not talking about making art, although that's certainly lovely and part of it. But we're talking about all the ways that we express ourselves in our lives. And we're not just talking about the way we express ourselves verbally. It's not just the word expression. It's how we move. It's how we interact with every moment of our day. All of that is a creative act. And although the spoken word is a very powerful form of expression, the not spoken word is equally powerful. Sometimes more is said with silence than with words. So it's a very, very profound and important contemplation that I think we can all make all the time, to become much more aware of how we are expressing ourselves through our body language, through our language, through the way we simply are in our being, through what we say and what we don't say. So again, just feel yourself in the way the totality of you expresses itself in your life. And as we all know, what we are, that pulsation of usness is very deep within. And it's that's always expressing out. It sometimes moves through a rather damaged container. It sometimes moves through a container that's maybe not so damaged, but still has places that distort the pure essence of what we are. And so our expression doesn't come out like we really feel ourselves to be. And we all have those moments when everything is wide open and we're just like in our magnificence. And then all of our expression, whatever it is, it's charged with that the potency, the shakti of our true essential nature. I was talking with my friend Robert on the phone the other day, and we somehow got talking about gurus, and we somehow ended up on YouTube, and I was showing him video clips of Muktananda, and I haven't looked at any of those in ages. And it was so wonderful to watch Muktananda. He was very connected, and watching him move was always just watching him sit in his chair and talk, and he was so embodied. You could just sense every word he spoke, at least in his public persona, was coming from this deep reservoir of his own sublime magnificence. And it was so lovely to watch that and remember how mesmerizing it can be to sit in the meditation hall and just watch him give a Dharma talk. And it's that completely connected from within and completely open, so whatever's coming through is so resonant and just pulsating with a combination of stillness and truth. And I think when we have stillness and truth, we've got that balance of creativity and compassion in our expressing of ourselves in this world. So I'm going to read you a couple of Mary Oliver poems, and then I want to talk about the Dharma of speech, and then we'll chant a little bit more, and then we'll meditate. So these are three very short poems. This one is called The Gardener. Have I lived enough? Have I loved enough? Have I considered right action enough? Have I come to any conclusions? Have I experienced happiness with sufficient gratitude? Have I endured loneliness with grace? I say this, or perhaps I'm just thinking it. Actually, I probably think too much. Then I step out into the garden, where the gardener, who is said to be a simple man, is tending his children, the roses. This morning, the beautiful white heron was floating along above the water, and then into the sky of this, the one world we all belong to, where everything, sooner or later, is a part of everything else, which thought made me feel for a little while quite beautiful myself. Mary Oliver, I'm pretty sure that in her sense of self, she doesn't think of herself as a beautiful woman. Not that, I mean, it matters, but I think if you read this poem with that sense of how she holds herself, this morning, I mean, she calls this poem, Poem of the One World. And it's such a teaching about what it is to fully live in the awareness of compassion, which obviously is the awareness that we really are all one. And we may have different forms, but we're all made of the same protoplasm. We're all made of the same stuff. There's no separation. Poem of the One World. This morning, the beautiful white heron was floating along above the water. And then, into the sky of this, the one world we all belong to, where everything, sooner or later, is a part of everything else, which thought made me feel, for a little while, quite beautiful myself. And the last one. Today I'm flying low, and I'm not saying a word. I'm letting all the voodoos of ambition sleep. This one is so about right speech. Today I'm flying low and I'm not saying a word. I'm letting all the voodoos of ambition sleep. The world goes on as it must. The bees in the garden rumbling a little. The fish leaping. The gnats getting eaten. And so forth. But I'm taking the day off. Quiet as a feather. I hardly move, though really I'm traveling a terrific distance, stillness, one of the doors into the temple. Stillness, one of the doors into the temple. Today I'm flying low and I'm not saying a word. I'm letting all the voodoos of ambition sleep. The world goes on as it must. The bees in the garden rumbling a little, the fish leaping, the gnats getting eaten, and so forth. But I'm taking the day off, quiet as a feather. I hardly move, though really I'm traveling a terrific distance. Stillness, one of the doors into the temple. And that's it, right? That's the secret. When we keep deepening into that still point inside of us, all of our presence, all of our action, all of our words, all of our not words, everything is infused with that marvelous stillness, and we become an act of beauty in the world. You know, I'm reminded back when I was still living mostly in the city, and I was for at least a year, I subjected myself to this training program for psychoanalysts. And what I was doing there is a mystery that we won't bother contemplating right now. But there I was with all these psychoanalytic postdoc kind of people. And they were all students within one particular sort of neo-Freudian school. And it was all very technical, and I hadn't read any of the material, and I didn't have any interest in reading all the material. I was interested in the man who ran the school. And that's why I kept going. And it was 3 hours on Saturday mornings. And I would sit there, and I rarely had anything to say. So I would listen and try to reframe what they were saying in my language, just to myself. And in that way, unpack that set of teachings into a system that they would make sense to me. And every now and then, I would ask a question. And I never had the sense that anybody understood my questions, because I spoke in a very different language than they did. And there were probably about 25 people in this group, and the teacher was a very old, in his 80s, very revered, venerable psychoanalyst. But I never had the sense he really understood my questions either, but whatever, it was fine, I would sit there. And again, generally I said nothing. I just listened. And a couple of times during one of the breaks, after we'd been at this for months, someone would come up to me and say, "I'm so glad you're here. It's just so lovely to have you in the room." And I would think to myself, I haven't said a bloody thing, except maybe ask a question that nobody understood. But it didn't matter. They probably didn't even realize I wasn't speaking, because they felt something else. And it was a very interesting teaching for me. And it was one of those moments in life where I really got, it's so not about what we say. Because in this group, you can imagine, everybody is competing with everybody else to be the smartest, to be the teacher's pet, to be the most whatever. And with all due respect and humility, I knew that I probably had more going on than anybody in that room, and I had absolutely no need to show it off. In fact, the thought of showing it off was rather repugnant to me. And so I just sat there, and I saw how just being there in this rather alien environment where I was still very comfortable in my own skin, something communicated to people in the group, and so It was a very, very empowering journey for me. And again, I think the great takeaway was what we say is way less important than what we are. We live in such a verbal culture, you know, we're so beaten into thinking we have to be the smartest, we have to compete, we have to just be fabulous. And that's so detrimental to what we actually are. I was thinking about this talk earlier today, and I was thinking, yes, it's like, we talk about communication. How much do we communicate without speaking? You know, how much do we communicate energetically? How much do we communicate just by the look on our face? You know, we can kill somebody with a bat, with the last, what's that? You sort of give them the up and down. What is that called?
The once over,
yes, thank you. Or the evil eye, you know. It's amazing how powerful. If we have the intention to really hurt someone, we can just do it with a dirty look. Not that I'm advocating that, but words, they're the tip of the iceberg. And somehow that doesn't lead me into what I actually wanted to talk about tonight, but somehow it all connects, because what I did want to talk about tonight, and what I've been feeling quite compelled to talk about, is the Dharma of speech. And within the Dharma of speech, really the process of listening. For people who don't know, which maybe is just Mira, the Dharma of speech is a classical yoga teaching, and it goes like this. Speak only that which is kind, true, necessary, and at the appropriate time. Speaking of which, I think it's time to turn on the AC. It's pretty stuffy in here. Yeah? So, deep listening. So, Dharma of speech, once again, speak only that which is kind, true, necessary, and at the appropriate time. And as I've been saying for so many years, if we only live by this, we're perfect. If we could really, really hold that intention, you know how I feel about that word, to speak only that which is kind, true, necessary, and at the appropriate time, life would be a bowl of cherries. But of course, we forget all the time because we get out of alignment with ourselves. We get out of that perfect balance of what I've been calling creativity and compassion in this cycle of teachings. But I really want to talk to you about deep listening, because I think we really do not listen. If you really, really, really think about the way you express yourself in conversation, you will be probably somewhat shocked and humiliated to realize how often you make assumptions about what someone is going to say before they've said it. Or instead of really taking in what they've said, you reference it, you self-reference it yourself. Or my favorite pet peeve, of course, you give unsolicited advice or inappropriate suggestions, counsel. It's all sort of the same category of a kind of space taking up that we do, often verbally, but sometimes non-verbally. And if you think about what it is when you find yourself in one of those situations where instead of just listening, just being in that compassion space of taking in what the other person is saying and really feeling it and hearing it and not needing to say anything back. And if you are going to say something back, it's kind, true, necessary, and appropriate. It's not, oh yeah, I know, yeah, you know, that same thing happened to me last week. Or, well, you know, if you would just do this, then that would not happen. Or, you get my drift. I can't think of a third example.
It could
but
be worse.
Yes, it could be worse. Thank you. Yeah, that's a great one. It could be worse. It's like, fuck you very much. You know, not so much anymore because I rarely leave the house. The only time I have contact with other human beings is on Monday night. But every now and then, if I dare to venture out into the world, and I mean, and again, ever since we got my thyroid meds corrected, I've been feeling great. But when I wasn't so great, if I would, goddess forbid, run into somebody and they would say, "How are you?" the question I despise more than any question in this life. But if they would say, "How are you?" and if I would get suckered into answering and make the mistake of saying, "Actually, I haven't been feeling well." Oh my God. Then comes the litany. Well, have you done this? Have you done this? None of which I am interested in hearing. It only makes me more exhausted. It makes me shut down. And all I want is for the person to say, "Oh, I'm sorry. That must be hard. Oh. Yeah." Because that's all we need. We just need people to sit with us in whatever experience we're in. And if it's a great experience or a not so great experience, we just want company. Because underneath it all, we're lonely. We want connection. And we want company on the journey. But we don't want the kind of company that batters us with its opinions and its advice and its whatever, its self-referencing. My mother was a great one for that. You could not tell her anything without then hearing the entire history of her life as it related to whatever that thing was. And it used to irk me so much. Oh my God. If you really pay attention to what triggers the compulsion, we're having anxiety. Whatever the person is expressing, for whatever reason, it's touching some place in us that makes us feel anxious. Whether we're in touch with that or not is irrelevant. That's what's happening, and we have to destroy them. And if we're a benevolent person, we'll destroy them unconsciously and gently, but nevertheless, we'll destroy them. If we're more malevolent, we'll actually do it with more aggression and animosity. But it's all coming from that place of needing to shut the other person down. For whatever reason, it doesn't matter what we're feeling. If we're feeling threatened, we're feeling anxious, it doesn't matter what we're feeling. It's our own stuff that causes us to rise up and basically put a huge damper on the conversation. There's nothing to stop a great open space between two people than putting in an inappropriate two cents. You know what I'm saying? It's amazing. And if you really pay attention, you'll notice you do it most of the time. It's horrifying, but there it is. And you know, Marshall Rosenberg, who I really respect quite a bit, in his work, I think he was very, very wise when he noticed most communication between people is violent. We're always telling each other what we think we should do, how we think we should act, or making ourselves bigger. Well, yeah, you did that, but you know what I did? Oh my God. It's all a power play. And again, sometimes it's very unconscious and basically benign. And sometimes it's very unconscious and not even so benign. But again, in my opinion and experience and observation, it's always coming from this internal feeling that makes us want to stop it. So pay attention. Pay attention to your, what we would call your adharma of speech. Pay attention to how often during the day what you say is actually not so kind, definitely unnecessary, definitely an inappropriate time, and definitely not true. It's just an ego trip. You know, so much conversation is just one ego blathering away to another, and nobody's listening. That's one of the reasons I hate that "how are you" question. It's such a stupid, like, pat, automatic. Like, I can't stand it, especially when I go to, we were talking about McCaffrey's, go to the grocery store, you're checking out, and the person says, "How are you?" They could give a damn how I am. They're not interested in how I am. And they don't have time to hear how I am. So I never answer. I just ignore it. I try to ignore that question as much as possible. But every now and then I find myself asking it because we're so hardwired to just say, "Hi, how are you?" It's like the worst question that ever was. How am I? You have 3 days to hear how I am? So let us listen. Deep listening from the deepest place inside, from the true heart. So we'll just sit for a few minutes tonight. I don't know if it was kind or necessary or appropriate, but I talked way longer than I anticipated. So I've majorly cut into our sitting time. So let yourselves go very deep. And one thing that I didn't refer to, but I suppose it's implied, the most important speaking, perhaps, that we do is the way we speak to ourself. And if you only practice the Dharma of speech in the conversations you have inside of yourself, that would be more than sufficient. In fact, if you chose only one, to speak to yourself always kindly or necessarily or truthfully or at the appropriate time, I think you would find yourself being much kinder and more gentle with yourself. So take all that in and let it take you where it takes you.